doers, mowing season is here. With Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower, just $329 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
What do 8 bags of concrete mix, a cooler full of 30-pound sea bass, and a 10-inch compound miter saw have in common? They're all things that are easier to load in and out of the bed of the new F-150, thanks to its new available Pro-Access tailgate that's also a swing gate. The new 2024 Ford F-150, tough this smart, can only be called F-150.
Available starting early 2024, Pro-Access tailgate available starting spring 2024, cargo and load capacity limited by weight and weight distribution.
Welcome to the NASCAR NBC podcast. I'm your host, Nate Ryan, back here at the Charlotte studio, joined by Jeff Burton, the mayor, and so glad you're here. I've been dying to talk about the race at Bristol Motor Speedway, and who better than yourself, a former driver. There was a lot to unpack from this race, Jeff, and I want to get to all of it, obviously, but first we're just going to start. Kevin Harvick, Chase Elliott. I just want to set this up. The first incident starts with a flat tire for somebody else, actually. Kyle Busch. He got in a flat tire. He's coming around them on fresher tires with 35 laps to go. Chase is in the top lane. He works around him kind of delicately in lap traffic. Harvick's on the bottom lane. He catches up to Chase. Tries to use Josh Balicki to screen Elliott from the lead. Doesn't really work. Virtually side by side, Elliott and Harvick going into turn three. Harvick leans on Chase. That cuts Chase's tire, and that sends into motion everything that transpired at Bristol that we're about to discuss here. So Chase says,
"Oh, well, it's something he does all the time. He runs into your left side constantly at other tracks, and sometimes it does cut down your left side. Other times it didn't, or it doesn't. Did it to me in Darlington a few weeks ago because he was tired of racing with me. And whether he did it on purpose, it doesn't matter. You know, at some point you got to draw the line. So." I don't care who he is or how long he's been doing it. I'm going to stand up for myself and my team, and, you know, we'll go on down the road.
Harvick says,
Just chicken shit. I mean, what else do you say? Throw a temper tantrum like you're 2 years old because you got passed for the lead and got a flat tire. We barely even rubbed. It just, you know, it's all Chase's way or it's no way, and if he doesn't get his way, then he throws a fit. Did the same thing earlier. He let the 24 go by middle of the stage and then just rode around until the 5 caught me and I was tight behind him and we wound up getting passed by the 5, so just hated for our guys. I told him I wanted to rip his freaking head off.
That's the setup. Who was right, if anybody was right? How do you see what happened at Bristol?
Bristol. You know, I mean, if you have the luxury of breaking it down in slow motion, which we do on a Monday, but the drivers don't on a Saturday night with 30 to go in the race. And you know, Chase was doing everything he could to keep Harvick behind him. Harvick was doing everything he could to get by Chase. When I look at that incident, you know, clearly Harvick had gotten Chase in a situation where he was behind the lap car. And when they – I really thought Harvick had the pass pulled off of 2. And then Chase made a real aggressive move to get underneath the lap car, kind of 3 wide and pretty tight down the back straightaway. And when they entered turn 3, they were door-to-door. Right then, they were door to door, and then if you watch, you know, they separate, and you see the right. You see Harvick with a steer to the right because he's loose. You know, he's loose getting in the corner. He chases it up and make contact, and cuts a tire. Now, what's interesting to me is that they didn't wreck. It cut the tire, right? And so a lot of these incidences we saw on Saturday night weren't wrecks. They were tire cuts from contact, and that's new, right? That's new to Bristol. And ironically enough, I spoke to multiple drivers on Saturday morning, and that was their biggest concern, was cut tires due to rubs. And they were right. So, you know, when I take a step back and I'm like, well, who's at fault? Who did what wrong? It's Bristol. I think you're going to see contact. You're going to see rubbing. I didn't even see anything intentional. I just saw a race going into turn 3. Harvick got loose, got inside of Chase, cut Chase's tire. Off they went. Then you know, Larson pulls the slide job, real aggressive slide job on Harvick. You know, Harvick's like, what the hell did you just do? You know what I mean? And he makes contact with Larson. I mean, all of that was hard, aggressive racing. And I understand the emotions. I understand why everybody was mad. But I have a hard time saying that Harvick intentionally ran into Chase Elliott. When I watch it and I see Harvick, the back of his car roll around, and then I see the left front tire do that, he's steering the car back up the racetrack and they make contact. It's racing at Bristol with 30 to go for the lead.
So just to put it in like layman's terms, when a driver is loose, because you know if you're a Chase Elliott fan, you probably see, oh, he turned right. You have to turn right to kind of save the car when you're entering turn three.
100%. I mean, when you're loose and when you can see, it's no different than, you know, when you're on ice, you know, the back of the car starts going there. Well, they teach you steer into the skid, right? they you know, so when Harvick, the back of the Harvick's car starts coming around, he's got to turn it right or he's going to spin out.
Yeah.
That's how a lot of wrecks we see happen. A car on the inside gets loose. He has to correct it. And it was just no more complicated than that.
So it's just a racing incident is the
100%. It was a racing incident. Yeah. I. But again, I don't. If I'm Chase, I'm pissed, right? I'm like, you know, what are you doing, man? Like, we're racing for the lead, and you ran me up in the wall. And I mean, you know, I don't think he made contact in the wall, but you know, I don't blame Chase for being mad. I don't blame Harvick for saying, dude, we're racing to Bristol. You know what I mean? I just think it's two guys that were going for a win. Harvick looking for his first win of the year. Everybody wants to be a Bristol winner. And, you know, Earnhardt Labonte. I mean, how many incidences have we seen? We show this montage of people throwing helmets at each other. It's Bristol. I think the great thing about Saturday is that we saw Bristol. We saw that action. We saw that side-by-side contact. We saw the things that we have always loved about Bristol that's been hiding. Bristol hasn't been Bristol, but it was on Saturday night.
Yeah, no question. I want to get back to Chase and Harvick in a minute, but the point you brought up about cut tires, because I mentioned it, Kyle Busch was in the middle of all this because he had gotten a cut tire. Christopher Bell got a cut tire, hit the wall. Chase Elliott, it did seem as if it
Denny
was
Hamlin.
Denny Hamlin, yeah, after the contact with Larson. It seemed like it was happening more often, but to your point, if drivers were nervous about it, it must be something that predated this race. Did it seem like it had been that way the last few years?
Or? Well, it's not Bristol. It's a car thing. You know, with no ride heights and everybody, even at Bristol, worried about aerodynamics, you know, everybody's got, you know, the wheels up in the wheel wells and there's not much clearance area and they're all steel bodies. And so in the Xfinity cars, they're a composite body. In the Cup Series, it's still steel bodies. And so, you know, with the cars being so low to the ground and teams not wanting to cut out the fenders, some of it's by rule. You can only cut out so much. All that stuff leads to, if you get somebody in the side of you, you know, it can cut your tire. Now, it looked like to me that what happened with Chase and Kevin is that maybe the right side exhaust cut the left side tire of Chase Elliott, and that could have happened at any point in racing's history. But it was ironic. I spoke to multiple drivers on Saturday morning, and they told me they were greatly concerned about side-to-side contact.
And Chase Elliott might have been more greatly concerned about Kevin Harvick. As he said, and I went back and looked, I don't know if you watched it, 2 weeks ago at Darlington, they did have a similar thing, entering a turn, and Harvick kind of squeezed him a little bit. Have you had a chance to look at that, or do you think Chase has beef here that it has happened, as he said numerous times? He said more than 10 times in his six seasons in Cup, he's had this happen.
You know, when he said that, I went,
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't on my mind that Harvick and Chase had these incidences. Now, I'm not disagreeing with Chase. It just wasn't on my mind. I have not. If he hadn't said that, it would have never even dawned on me that they had some sort of issues at all. I just didn't see it. I do think that further in Chase's interview, I found this really compelling.
I don't care who he is or how long he's been doing it. I'm going to stand up for myself and my team.
Chase said, I know who he is. He's been here a long time, but I'm going to stand my ground. I thought that was a really interesting comment for a Cup champion to make. Almost like, I'm still the new guy, and I'm not going to let the older guys push me around. I have to stand my ground. That struck me because I don't believe the drivers view Chase Elliott as the new guy. Hmm. I don't believe the drivers view him as someone that has to stand his ground any more than anyone else. Like, he's an established driver, He is a champion. He's a winner. He, for the most part, is a very clean driver, does things the right way. We all cross the line every now and then. And I just thought that was a really interesting comment that came from emotion. Like, that struck me because I'm like, does Chase believe that he has to stand his ground at this point in his career? Well,
it struck me too, Jeff, because go back 4 years ago, and he did almost the exact same thing with Hamlin when clearly he had a case there for being aggrieved. I mean, Hamlin wrecked him at Martinsville, and Chase went right up to him and said, "You wrecked me. I'm not putting up with it." And it seemed like that was an instance of, okay, Chase Elliott's established himself. That was year two in the Cup Series, and now we're in year six, and it's kind of weird to hear him say that, like, I'm not going to get pushed around. I didn't think he has been pushed around really since then.
I've seen him pushed around, like you mentioned. I've seen him pushed around, but I don't view him as, you know, a guy that people try to take advantage of.
And, yeah.
Hey, listen, when you're a young driver, there's a target on your back. It just is. That's how it is. You know, all the established guys are like, look, you know, he's not going to come take my spot in this sport, right? That's what competition is.
Yeah.
And they make it hard on the young drivers. And it was, they made it hard on me, and I made it hard on young drivers when I could. Because it's not because they're young. It's not because you don't like them. It's not because of anything other than if you're going to come into my playground and beat me, you're going to have to earn it. Like, you're going to have to earn it. And they do make it harder on younger drivers. It's part of what makes the sport work. But it just, Chase ain't one of those guys. He's not a younger driver. He's a champion, a race winner, a driver for one of the best teams in the industry, in the history of industry. Like, he's one of the mainstays of the sport. And it just struck me, does he see himself like that? I thought that was just an interesting
It's
comment.
Not like he needs to prove anything at this point.
Yeah.
He's won an Xfinity championship, a cup championship.
But I love, and I've said this before, I love the fact that Chase always, you know, for the most part, looks at things, how could I have done better? What could I have done different?
Extremely
this was my fault, right?
Yep.
I love that about Chase. I do, because I think that if we all did that in our lives, the whole world would be a better place, right? How can I be better? And I love that. I think Chase's mindset is right. And everybody has their own mindset of what's right for them, but I just think it's right. It just surprised me when he made a comment.
And Chase Elliott, even though he's in his sixth season, I mean, he's 25 years old. Kevin Harvick is 45. Chase Elliott was born in 1995. Kevin Harvick in 1975. Is there any generational aspect to this about the way they look at racing maybe differently? And I ask you, Jeff, because, I mean, you raced against Harvick for 13 years. As I said, Chase only raced against Harvick for 6 years. I mean, do you think they race differently from Chase's generation versus Harvick's?
I do, but I also think that, you know, I think Bristol is, we've seen these emotions at Bristol for as long as I can remember, and it's something about that night race and that track. I think that the track being, you know, when the track changed and it became multiple grooves, it changed the way you raced at Bristol. And then, you know, we saw the track change on Saturday night. I do think the approach to Bristol has changed. And I think the driver's mindset going into the race has changed. But I think it's actually not just necessarily Bristol, but I think the racing is actually more aggressive today than it was when I raced. Mark Martin and I have had these conversations because of stage points, because how important restarts are, all of those things. I actually think it's more aggressive. Now, I also think we see less wrecks, which is interesting to me. Like, we see less wrecks than we did in the late 90s, early 2000s. But it's more aggressive.
Yeah.
And those two things don't add up.
That is
some of it's a car. I mean, if you, like, you, a lot of times you go to these mile and a halfs and a car will get completely sideways and it won't spin out, right? Some of it's that. But the way they race today, I think, is actually more aggressive than the way we raced.
There's less give and take because every points
matter
more.
Exactly.
Like you said, restarts, double file restarts, and 550 horsepower package. Like, there's so many races that feel like super speedway races now that you can't give up spots.
All that stuff. And I think also, you know, drivers have always had to walk this line of how selfish can I be and still have the respect of my peers, whatever respect of your peers means to you. So, you know, Joey Logano I don't think he cares.
Right.
When I say that, I think Joey Logano wants to be a leader in the sport. I think Joey Logano wants to have the respect of the drivers, but Joey Logano also wants to do things and will do things that he needs to do to win the race. And I mentioned Mark Martin earlier. Mark Martin was on a different end of the spectrum of where Joey Logano is. Dale Earnhardt was on a different end of the spectrum. Everybody has to do it their way. And when you feel like somebody didn't return that to you, it gets frustrating. You know, it gets really frustrating. And I think we saw some of that on Saturday night.
So Chase is at that point with Harvick, in other words, where he feels like Harvick treats him the way Logano
clearly
said,
I wouldn't have thought that, but yeah. In listening to Chase's interview, then he feels that way.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's really all that matters is what he thinks. I love the fact that they continued their conversation. And I saw you. They didn't see you, but I saw you.
I was there.
And you know, they continued the conversation. It was very public, right? And they decided, we need to get away. And they went into Chase's hauler and continued the conversation. And whatever happened in there, whatever happened in that trailer was good. Whether they just continued screaming at each other, whether they came to some sort of resolution, whatever happened in there is the right way to handle it. Because the conversation was going to end with, there was no resolution, right? Clearly, these things go further back for them. So just continue that. You know what I mean? Just go ahead and finish the conversation. I personally like that. To hell with sending somebody a text.
Right, right.
You know, if you think you can be productive, and sometimes you can't, you know, at a racetrack on a Saturday night, maybe it's best to call on Monday, but neither one of them were finished, and they found a way to have the conversation, and you and I don't have a clue what they said.
No,
I think that's good.
No, we don't. And I think that's okay, too. I thought it was the perfect confrontation. We got, I thought, best of both worlds in all senses. We got the emotion. We got the disagreement. To your point, they went and had further talks, which we're not privy to, and who knows? Maybe they still agree to disagree. Maybe this isn't over. But nobody swung at each other. We're not talking about fines for crew members. You know, I thought they handled it about as well as you can, two drivers who have a disagreement over something.
And, you know, you got to go back, too, and you remember Chase Elliott wrecked Joey Logano late in the race at Bristol.
Yep.
And Joey Logano's back there saying, hey, you know, what about the only reason I bring that up is because I think Chase's frustration is further than just Bristol. Clearly, he made the comment, right? And Chase is a level-headed guy. Chase is not, he doesn't talk a lot. He focuses on his racing. Harvick, you know, focuses on his racing. Kevin Harvick's not the same Kevin Harvick that he was 15 years ago. He's not. So we had two people that although were exceptionally mad, in most cases are pretty calm, level-headed, smart drivers, and they both lost it. And I like the fact they just continued the conversation.
I think no question Chase takes it personally. Chase thinks that Harvick, there's something more to this, and that's, again, which causes the emotion, causes the retribution. I want to ask you about that. Chase did take a couple of shots at Harvick when he came out of the pits. He ran him up the track a little bit, maybe made a slight bit of contact, but Harvick still held the lead. And then Harvick clearly felt as if Chase Elliott cost him that victory because he stayed in front of Harvick for probably a solid 10 laps, 15 laps, and allowed Kyle Larson. Larson might have had the faster car, but that certainly gave him the advantage of catching up to Harvick. And as you said, Larson puts the slide job on him and wins the race. We've seen other drivers do this, and this is one of the great things about racing is that you can control another person's fate in a way that doesn't happen in a lot of other professional sports. And we saw Ross Chastain do this at something similar at Atlanta earlier this year when he kind of blocked Kyle Busch and allowed his teammate Kurt to win. Fair game, do you think? Is it within bounds to do what Chase Elliott did to Kevin Harvick to let Larson win the race?
Well, I said this about the situation with Ross. I said, that's on the edge of what I want to see, right? I'm all about teamwork, and I'm all about that, but that was right on the edge of what, to me, is acceptable. Now, I've always said this is a self-policing sport, and NASCAR has to step in whenever they have to step in, but when they don't step in, you got to take it into your own hands. And the reason that you don't see somebody get wrecked every single week by the same guy racing for the lead is because they're going to wreck you back. It's how it works.
Yep.
Like if, you know, I mean, people mess with Kyle Busch, Kyle Busch is going to wreck them back. If people mess with Eric Almirola, Eric Almirola is going to repay it. It's, you know, it's my nuclear arsenal is bigger than yours, right?
Mutually assured destruction.
Yes.
Yes.
And so, you know, that's part of the beauty of this sport is that NASCAR rarely has, if you really think about it, NASCAR rarely steps in on these incidences. So if you're Chase Elliott, you're like, hey, you took a win from me, so I'm going to make it hard for you to win this race. And if you're Harvick, you're like, dude, we're racing at Bristol. Like, it was, I got loose and it got inside of you. I didn't mean to wreck you. I just, your tire got cut. Yeah. What are you doing?
Yeah, racing incident, revenge doesn't fit what happened here.
Well,
yeah.
in Harvick's situation, Harvick's opinion, no, it doesn't. In Chase's, it does. I have to wonder, though, if you're Chase and you go back and watch the incident and you see Harvick get loose, if he doesn't feel a little bit, I didn't understand the whole story. Now, you can make the case, well, if he hadn't been driving so hard, he wouldn't have, you know, you can make all those cases. But this, to me, was a different situation than Ross. Ross said, okay, I'm going to run my line, which happens to be the line of the leader. That's going to hurt him. It's going to help my teammate. In this case, I don't think Chase was helping his teammate. Now, I think Chase was wrong in what he did because it hurts his championship hopes. Why are you going to give Kyle Larson more points to do battle with you? Why are you going to make his pathway to home to Phoenix even easier?
Yeah, even if he's your teammate, you'd rather have Kevin Harvick have his 5 playoff points than Larson.
You know, no disrespect to Kevin Harvick, but the next if Kevin Harvick and his team can get through the next three races, they're magicians because they haven't had any speed on the mile and a half. They have not been good at all on the road courses, and you got Talladega. The first three races went straight into their wheelhouse for this year. These next three races go directly out of their wheelhouse. So why did you give Larson more ammunition to beat you?
Yeah.
Like, I thought, to me, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Like, I would rather go against this year, I'd rather go against the weakness of what Harvick's team has had than the strength of what Kyle Larson. Maybe you don't think that through in the heat of the moment. But, you know, as I was watching that, I'm thinking, I don't think that's a very smart move. Payback in racing should be when it's good for you, not when it's bad for the other guy.
And this indirectly could hurt Chase Elliott.
So you might have hurt yourself.
Yep. Yeah, that's a great point, Jeff. I hadn't even thought of it that way. But you're right about Harvick. Second round is not a great round when you look at how he's run on road courses recently. I don't think the Roval fits well. And for whatever reason, Talladega Super Speedway Racing hasn't been great for that team either. But I want to ask you, because I know you said in the broadcast that you had talked to Harvick last week, and we talked to him pre-race in his media availability, and I was struck. Like, he was in such a good mood. I mean, he seems like he's in a really good place. It might have been, you know, we learned yesterday morning that his crew chief, Rodney Childers, had just signed a contract extension. So the four team is together. They've survived a lot of adversity this season. They've overcome some slow cars. Harvick talked at length about that before the race Saturday night at Bristol. But yet, he had this calmness about him where it just seemed as if he knew how good he was going to be that night. And it seems as if the four team is getting some of their mojo back here. I'm sure that compounded and why he was so angry and all the frustration, all the emotions boiling over. But nearly a year now since that team's last victory, does it seem as if maybe they're turning a corner? I mean, we've seen Kevin Harvick turn it on. 2017, he made the championship round when he didn't have a great regular season. Does it seem like, if he can get through this round, does it seem like they're starting to turn the corner?
It seems like it. The trouble I've got is that we haven't been at tracks where their weaknesses have been. I think that they could go to Richmond and compete for a top five. I think they could go to Bristol and compete for a top five, Darlington and compete for a top five. This weekend, if they bring speed this weekend at Vegas, then I'll be like, yeah, like, wow. But that's a big if, because, I mean, I actually watched the race back from the spring in Vegas, and they lapped him.
Right, right. That was the race where everybody was like,
what's
happening to
and
this team?
Yeah. They've gotten better since then because they've recognized their weaknesses, right? And when you recognize your weakness, you go to work. And they didn't understand they were going to be that far off. And they've gotten better, but I'm not convinced that they're going to be able to have the pace, you know, that they're going to need to have. I mean, they're behind. They're behind in points, and they've got to find a way to go outrun. They got to outrun Joe Gibbs Racing. They got to outrun Penske. In order to get into the next round of the playoffs, I don't know that he can do that.
let's talk about some of those other teams. I mean, Larson wins the race, and all three of his teammates advance now to the round of 12. I think a lot of people thought, and you said on Motormouse that you had concerns about Alex Bowman. You know, William Byron pulls out a third-place finish to advance by a couple points. That was impressive. The Gibbs cars, though, I thought also weren't quite as good as we thought they might be. Hamlin was great, obviously, until the contact with Larson, but Truex was a little off, and Kyle Busch talked about being a little off as well. So it surprised you a little bit? Or?
Yeah, it surprised me a lot. I mean, I still finished fifth in fantasy, but I would have done a lot better if Kyle would have run better.
He's on in my lineup, too. Yeah.
Actually, he was going to do okay, and he had that tire. He cut a tire, but yeah.
He didn't have winning speed. Like, that was what surprised me.
No, he did not have winning speed. Yeah. Neither one of them had winning speed. It did surprise me. I really thought Kyle Busch going to Bristol was the guy to beat. I just felt like, you know, he's so good at Bristol, but they never showed pace to win the race. Their one run, they showed third, fourth place speed, but they never showed pace to win a race, and Truex either. And yes, it did surprise me.
It does seem more wide open. The narrative of the first round was 3 750 races, and the way Gibbs raced at Darlington at Richmond, it seemed like, okay, this is the 750 team, and that narrative changed certainly Saturday night, and especially with, again, how good the Hendrick cars were. Even Keselowski, who I wrote off completely, is maybe not going to advance. He ran about as well as I've seen.
He faded, though.
He faded toward the end.
He and Logano, you know, they both, you know, and really, honestly, Blaney either, you know, they just, Keselowski ran good early. They just didn't have the pace. They just didn't have the pace that they needed. They're not way off, but they were off enough. I mean, compare when Joey Logano got put in the back to when Chase Elliott got put in the back. Chase Elliott got put in the back. Next, you looked up and he's sitting there running 10th or 11th all of a sudden. And when the 22 got in the back, he didn't go anywhere.
Couldn't recover. Yeah.
Didn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
And they just didn't have the pace.
Yeah, and that was also true. Tyler Reddick never able to recover from that pit stop that sent him in the back.
The one that really surprised me was Kurt.
Yeah.
I just didn't see that coming. I mean, as good as Kurt is at you know, at Bristol, and as good as that team has been, I just did not see them running that poorly. It shocked me.
I thought he was going to make the next round for sure. And now it just feels – it almost feels like it's reset back to where it was a few months ago, where Larson's the favorite, and it feels a little bit more wide open through the rest of the field as with seven races left. Is that how you see it?
Or? I mean, I like what Denny and his team are doing, but they are having execution issues. You know what I mean? Like, you know, they did win, right, and they've run well, but they – these little things get them, and I say little, but in this sport, you especially with these playoffs, at some point you have to eliminate those mistakes. They got to go away, and that's been this team's weakness, is that they have pace. I think they're the second-best team. I thought Kyle and his team had gotten there, but they have not been as good recently. So I think Denny is probably the second best team right now, but they're going to have to eliminate mistakes.
I want to ask you about the Xfinity finish, which might have been the best in any series so far this season, with AJ Allmendinger going around Austin Cindric and Justin Allgaier to get that victory on the final restart. What did you see there, and was that Bristol at its best?
Well, first of all, none of them cut a tire.
Yeah, that was my next question. I mean, a good sign for the Cup Series next year. They're going to run in bodies similar to that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Listen, that, you know, when I was watching it, I'm like, what the hell am I watching? Like, it was crazy. It was three drivers with a ton to gain. I know that there's some hardcore guys that, you know, don't like the playoffs or whatever, but at the very least, surely people can recognize how the playoffs have increased the intensity in the sport. And if you don't recognize that, then you've just decided that there's no good in the playoffs, and you just can't see it, because if you can't see that it's raised the intensity, you don't want to see it. And that was an example where you had three drivers with a ton to gain and almost nothing to lose. And it showed. They laid it out there. They didn't care who they pissed off. They didn't care if they came back on the wrecker. They didn't care. And rarely in a driver's career do you get in that position.
Right.
Where you have... I've been in that position where I went to Richmond knowing I was in the playoffs, knowing I had advanced, and that was the most fun race I ever ran. It was so much fun. You had three of them that were in that situation all tied up in a knot with a few laps to go, and it was magic. I mean, it was magic. But it was full contact. I mean, it wasn't respectful racing. It wasn't clean racing. It wasn't anything other than I don't give a damn what you think. I'm going to try to win this race. And it was really fun to watch.
And as much as we talk about like how the playoffs has changed everything with the, you know, win and you're into the next round, win in advance, win or else, nothing else matters. Points underscored everything here. That was the backdrop of, does AJ Allmendinger make the move he makes if he isn't battling Austin Cindric for the regular season championship that's worth 5 extra points? Just the title itself. I mean, that to me, that added another layer to this that obviously wasn't there prior to 2017.
Listen, I made this comment years ago that points are more important today than they've ever been. And people, that's not right. Win, you're in. No, because even if you've won, points still matter. I mean, look how you get in the playoffs. Look how Kevin Harvick got in the playoffs. Look how you transfer to the next round. Most people don't win their way to the next round. They point their way to the next round. Points and how you accumulate those points are more important than they've ever been in the history of the sport, because there's more opportunity to gain them, which means there's more opportunity to lose them. And when you start paying points for how you run during a race, and then you say, hey, by the way, you can take those points with you into these playoffs with these cutoff races, it makes them that much more important, because you can't separate yourself, because they're going to reset you. When you pay points for 34 races, 36 races, separation, 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 right? How many people would go last race of the year with a chance to win a championship? So now they put you all back together and they seed you by the points that you earned in the regular season and the points you earned in the playoffs. Points are is more important than they've ever been in the history of this sport. And how you get them is by being successful on track. And when you win, that's huge. That's 5 damn points you take with you.
All through the next 3 rounds, AJ Allmendinger will have
and
that.
If you look at the lineup for Cup and Xfinity, the guys that won the races, won the stages and all that, they're in the best position to win a championship.
I'm glad we emphasized this, because that truly was, I think, the intensity of that Xfinity race was, you know, that's 10 extra points essentially for AJ with the regular season championship and the win.
And it had something to do with Saturday night too. Here's Harvick in the cellar, right, racing against all these guys, and he needs points.
To your point, he's worried about the second round. That's 5 extra points, and we've seen how much that can make a difference
in
advancing.
I mean, we've seen ties. We saw 1 point. I mean, how many people – look at the separation in points on Saturday night by 3 points. 3 points would have swung either way. 3 points. That means if Eric Almirola would have picked up 1 spot in each of the races or picked up – a spot in 1 of the 3 races in a stage finish, he advances. Think about that.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
It's a lot to think about. Another thing to think about, so we saw a slam-bang finish Saturday night. Well, certainly saw one Friday night. A great finish Saturday night. The trucks put on a good show. It felt a little bit, to me, like the racing gods might have been trying to send a message about Bristol Motor Speedway and its high bank concrete. I know you have Marcus Smith's ear. There were certainly a lot of people wondering if they've committed to the dirt race next year, but long term, does Bristol need 2 weekends on the concrete instead of 1 weekend on the dirt?
So I think fans get the vote. And, you know, it's interesting because I think that we listen to the fans so much that sometimes good decisions aren't made because the way the wind blows, right, changes. There's no doubt in my eyes that when Bristol got reconfigured, it took some of the pizzazz away from Bristol. On Thursday night and on Friday night, the groove was on the bottom. And I thought the magic of the racing was because the groove was on the bottom. 1 groove like it used to be. I don't give a damn how they got to it. They got to it by putting a compound on the track. So what? Who cares? They got it. They got it back. And we saw really good racing. When they didn't reapply the traction compound on Saturday, I was frustrated. I'm like, we just watched 2 really good races, everybody bottom feeding, old Bristol,
old
why
school,
are we not repeating
yep.
it? And
right.
then we got what we got Saturday. I'm like, well, I don't know what the hell I'm talking about.
That's all right. I felt too. I had the same thought. Like, if it worked Thursday and Friday, why would you not want the bottom to be dominant? Because that's what we go to Bristol to see, is the root and gouge and the bump and run.
Yeah. I think that I mentioned the fans, and here's why I mentioned them. How many people were going to the spring Bristol race? We saw more fans there. We saw more interaction. I talked to Marcus Smith about it. There was more fan interaction for the Bristol Dirt Race than there was for the Bristol Spring Race mm-hmm. in the past. Mm-hmm. Now, not 10 years ago, but in the recent past. So what changed at Bristol on Saturday night? I mean, what changed? Did the track change? Because they were running the top. So what changed? So if you get the kind of racing that we saw all weekend long at Bristol, then yes, do not put dirt at Bristol. You don't need it. But if that doesn't continue, then you got to give the fans what they want. What the fans want, I knew this as a driver. I was good with it. I knew that the fans wanted to see some damn wrecks at Bristol.
That's a hard thing for a driver to accept sometimes.
I mean, how do you not?
Yeah.
I mean,
well, that's why drivers love the reconfiguration, because with multiple lanes, like, they didn't have to worry about getting bumped off the bottom anymore. But it took intensity
out of it.
It did.
It made it easier to drive.
Yep.
It did. It made it easier to drive. It took intensity out of the race to the point where they said, hey, let's put this magic compound on the racetrack to try to get the groove back to the bottom. That's why they did it. That's what started it. So whatever happened on Saturday night, and I can't say it was just because of the playoffs, because this isn't the first race Bristol's been in the playoffs.
No, it's the second year.
Yeah. So,
and last year's wasn't as good or as memorable
as
this one, and I'm not really sure why. Yeah, I can't really explain.
So what we have to be careful of doing, and I mentioned this about the fans, what we have to be careful about doing in the sport is, you know, we'll get somebody that runs well at a particular race, and we're like, oh my God, he's going to championship. He's so fast. He's so good. And then they don't. We overreact. So we'll take a race at Bristol and we'll say, wow, man, that was awesome. That was unbelievable. That was great. We got to go back there twice a year. Don't change anything. But what changed? So if I take all the emotion out of it and I look factually at it, if I'm Marcus Smith, clearly the Bristol Dirt is on the schedule, right? I look at it and I say, okay, we're going to stick to that. All right, and we're going to see another half-mile concrete race in the fall. And if we get another magical race next year, then in 2023, I'm like, yeah, maybe not going to put the dirt down.
Yeah.
And that's I'm okay with that. Like, I like the flexibility of the schedule. I like the flexibility. At any moment, Charlotte Motor Speedway could say, you know what, the oval races are better than the road course races. Let's go back to the oval. Indianapolis Motor Speedway could say, hey, you know what, the 2.5-mile track will be better for these cars than the road course. Let's go back. I like that flexibility. And Bristol now, because they're putting dirt on the facility, has that flexibility. But I don't think we should overreact. I think that I just don't think that's fair.
It's a really good point. The reason they went to dirt was because the spring race had become lackluster, not just with the crowds, but the action had been a little bit too, to your point, Jeff. I mean, like, the multi-lane thing, the reconfig, it sort of changed it. If they have a great dirt race on Easter Sunday night 2022, And it draws another big crowd, or a bigger crowd than even this past year, which is, as you said, was a bigger crowd than previous spring races. It'd be hard to argue with them.
Yeah, these aren't easy decisions, and they're risky.
Yeah,
I applaud Marcus and his team for gambling. You know what I mean? Like, for, you know, how many drivers said the Roval wasn't going to work, and how many fans said the Roval's a joke and all that. And it's been really good. It's been a lot of fun, challenging, difficult. I started hearing rumors it would be a dirt race and cup in 2021. I'm like, we really need to do that. And then Bristol, like, what? We're doing it Bristol? Like, what? But then I took a step back and I went, well, wait a minute. The fans haven't been coming to the Bristol spring race. And the fans vote with the ticket. And clearly their vote was, I don't like what I'm seeing.
Try something new. You mentioned the Roval. I'm going to get out of here on the Roval and ask you about round two, NASCAR, NASCAR NBC. You go to Las Vegas Motor Speedway next this weekend. And Joey Logano said something really interesting this past Saturday. He said that he thought that Vegas is actually the most unpredictable race of round two. And granted, Talladega is its own entity. can't even really put that in a category of trying to evaluate how unpredictable it's going to be. But I thought it was interesting because a lot of people say, well, the Roval's the X factor wild card race, whatever you want to call it. But Logano's point was Vegas with its 550 horsepower and the crazy restarts, that's like another super speedway race. Your thoughts heading to Vegas, is this maybe more of a wild card than we think?
I think it's a huge wild card. I just don't think it's as big of a wild card as Talladega.
Yeah.
You could argue it may be as big of a wild card as the Roval, because now more people know about the Roval and there's more road racing in general, and we kind of know who the best road racers are. So I get what he's saying there. I just think that when I look at the Roval, there's more opportunities for disaster running all by yourself than at Vegas. I think Vegas, and watching the replay of last year of the spring race, the restarts are going to be nuts. Crazy nuts. And then, you know, they're going to get some separation, and now it's you racing the racetrack. And not that it's easy. I'm not saying it's easy, but in level of difficulty, I think the Roval is, you know, it's Darlington level hard. And I don't think Vegas is as hard as Darlington in the Roval.
Interesting. Certainly going to be a lot to watch here in round two, starting with Vegas. Always appreciate your insight. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, man, it's fun.
Our thanks again to Jeff Burton for joining us on the NASCAR on NBC podcast. A reminder, you can see Jeff as part of NASCAR on NBC coverage Sunday from Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Countdown to Green begins at 6 p.m. Eastern on NBCSN. Green flag for the round of 12 opener at Las Vegas Motor Speedway in the Cup Series, sometime right around 7:20 p.m. Eastern on NBCSN. And before the Las Vegas Motor Speedway race on NBCSN, it's the IndyCar season finale, the Long Beach Grand Prix. That gets started at 3 p.m. Eastern on NBCSN. So a full block of about 8 hours of motorsports coverage on NBCSN, IndyCar leading directly into NASCAR, all getting started at 3 p.m. Eastern this Sunday, NBCSN. Don't miss it. Our thanks, as always, to producers Aaron Feldstein, Emily Conboy, and Trevor Gavin for helping with the coordination of guests for the NASCAR on NBC podcast. And any feedback, you can send it to me on Twitter, at Nate Ryan is my handle. Thanks again for listening to the NASCAR on NBC podcast.
Doers, mowing season is here with Spring Black Friday Savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas-like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas-like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower, just $329 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.